Hey friends, it's Ian from TV's The Recovering Gleek, Ugly Podcast. When Lena and I first decided to make this podcast, we quickly realized we had literally zero idea of how to make that happen. Thankfully, a friend of ours recommended the podcasting platform Anchor. Anchor is free. It has all of the tools you need to record and edit your podcast from your phone or computer. You can even add songs from Spotify into it. And the absolute most amazing thing about Anchor is that they will distribute your podcast for you. So anywhere that you listen to Recovering Gleek, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, whatever weird third-party app you're using, it is there because Anchor put it there. And the icing on the cake is that you can make money from your podcast through Anchor with no minimum listenership. All you have to do is record an ad, which is why I am recording an ad right now, because I want money very badly. It is everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
One, two, three.
Oh, good one.
Why was that fun?
Well, that's your episode, y'all.
Something about the placement of our hands made it feel like It was choreography. We both did like prayer hands.
Speaking of us being choreographed, and speaking of us being Uncanny Valley versions of each other, we just went to the Taco Bell, mm-hmm. and they said, "Have a nice day," and we both at the same time went, Thank you too. You got it. You mess it up now.
I know, that's embarrassing for me.
But we both went, "Thanks, you too," in like the same inflection. It was so funny.
We're just trying. We want to be cast as the twins from The Shining in the remake. Boom.
Welcome to Recovering Gleek, a podcast for all of your complicated feelings about the TV show Glee.
Happy Loki finale day.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited.
We truly haven't talked about any Marvel anything since WandaVision ended.
I think we like just got so into WandaVision. Mm-hmm. Just like the lore, the like conspiracies. We got very into it. Not that we're not into Loki. In fact, we're very into Loki. Except for that first episode, I did fall asleep.
That's true.
I was very embarrassed, but I have not fallen asleep for any episode yet.
Full disclosure.
Since then.
I got maybe two into WandaVision.
Yeah.
And was very let down by the finale.
I hear you.
If you liked the finale, that's great. I personally, it wasn't what I wanted it to be.
Yeah.
And no, I'm not one of those people who's like, because the X-Men didn't show up. It was just like story reasons. It felt very rushed, and it felt like the easiest way they could have solved it to me personally.
You weren't pissed about like Mephisto not being there?
Yeah, I was pissed that Mephisto wasn't there. Yeah. And I said, "You owe me emotional damages, Marvel."
He said, "Ralph Boner, give me money."
I hardly know her. But for real. But I've been, ever since then, much more cautious with my emotions when it comes to Marvel television.
I hear you, yeah.
Because I also really liked Falcon and Winter Soldier. Yeah. I was once again let down by the finale, mm-hmm. for very different reasons.
That barbecue scene, though, is maybe one of that my favorite Marvel scenes I've ever seen in my life.
Excellent. Fantastic. Yeah. I just don't like how they wrapped up John Walker.
Walker, yeah.
So, I have loved Loki. Mm-hmm. I have had very guarded emotions. But yeah, by the time this drops, we will have already seen it.
Yeah.
Hopefully
we liked it.
Hopefully it's not fool me once, shame on me, fool me twice, shame on me, fool me a third time, shame on me again.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, hopefully I like this finale finally.
I hear ya.
What?
I had to do the Glax today.
Did you not do them?
No. It has been so long since I forgot to do a task. Freaking hell. I guess I'm flying without a seatbelt. I'm just going to look at Glee Wiki and see what happens.
Woo! Well, hello, everyone. My name is Ian Allred. I'm giving the recap today, and I'm also ugly.
Woof. What's up? My name is Lena Knatzer. I've had a really long week, and it's only Tuesday, and I'm also ugly. My God. Okay. Well, I will give you some Glax, but I have not looked at these before. I am anything if not ill-prepared. So how does that phrase go? I don't know.
I think you used it correctly.
Okay, good. There's lots of negatives in there. I can't keep track of them.
One new rule, one negative per sentence, please. I don't want this double negative nonsense.
Freak my butt out.
I hate it. Do you want to do the Glax right now?
Yeah.
Get right into it?
Yeah.
Let's hit it.
More to talk about?
Not really.
Me neither.
We just did some shows.
We did.
And now we're doing a podcast.
Truth.
Let's do some Glax.
I love that. Yeah, today we just got done with a performance of Pirates of Penzance.
Pirates of Penzance.
Ian did a great job today during his little tap battle moment.
Thank you. Lena sucked.
Thank you for being honest with me for once.
I believe in honesty among friendships. No, Lena was very good.
You did one.
She's very funny.
I'm sure. Hear me out. I only watch you in like your cop moments, so it's okay if you don't watch me at all.
Yeah, I was going to say, truly the only time that I ever see you in this show is the 30 seconds in my song when you sing to me.
Well, did you like it today?
I did. Actually, no joke, I thought it was the best it ever was today.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why. I was like really feeling
whoa.
Or the moment when I try and hit on you and then you hit bump me away. Those are the two moments in the whole show where I look at you.
I was like, you hit on me? And I was thinking that you hit on me as the cop. And I was like, no, you do not.
No.
You don't.
As his twin brother, the pirate.
Yes.
I have a whole backstory.
Do you? Oh my God, I would like to hear it.
Okay, hello everyone. These are your Glax. So, in Pirates of Penzance at the Utah Shakespeare Festival, I play the Sergeant of Police, who is a character who's only in Act 2. Uh-huh. And so in Act 1, they just put a wig and a beard on me, and I'm a pirate. Who then just disappears in Act 2. So yeah. I decided, because I play him very stupid, so I decided that he walked off a cliff and died.
Oh no, but, buddy. What do you have does your pirate have a name?
His name is Thaddeus.
Thaddeus, yes. Very good.
And the sergeant of police name is Harold.
Harold, good.
And the reason they look exactly the same is because they are twin brothers. And Thaddeus left nobility to go be a pirate, and it brought great shame to the family.
I mean, that is canon. That's how all the pirates are.
Yeah, they're all noblemen who have gone wrong.
Yeah.
And so Harold was like, oh my gosh, Thaddeus is making us look bad. I need to like bring honor back to the family.
Uh-huh.
And so he was kind of pressured by his family name to join the police force, even though he didn't want to. And so he always like feels this immense pressure that he has to like save the family from disgrace, even though he is terrified of everything and doesn't want to actually do any of it.
Well, good backstory.
That's the story of two brothers, Thaddeus and Harold. One
wow.
Time.
Wow. I like that they're brothers. What's their last name?
They don't have one. Oh, I never thought
it.
That far.
Like kind of like how like some nobility doesn't have last names. That he's just like the royal family is just like of Wales.
Yeah, they're of Penzance.
Awesome.
Yeah, Thaddeus and Harold of Penzance. All right. Now those were your Paracts.
Paracts.
Now onto your Glacts.
I'll give you my backstory next time.
Wait, actually, if you have it, tell it right now.
Oh, I'll tell you later.
Okay.
I don't want to waste too much time on the backstory.
Okay.
I'll tell you guys next time. So you better tune in next week.
Do you want to hear my ragtime backstory?
Yeah.
Really fast. So in ragtime, I'm in the ensemble. And I play a Russian immigrant, and there's a woman in the cast who plays my wife. We have no lines. We are truly just like in crowd scenes as Russian immigrants. And our backstory is that we're Model and Seidel from Fiddler on the Roof.
That makes me cry. I love that.
Just escaped Russia to America.
Dude, that rocks. Actually,
they can't catch a break because ragtime is not kind to the immigrants.
No, literally.
Yeah.
I love that.
All right, now on to those were your racks. Now
on to your and Glax. Next week, I'll give you my Comedy of Errors Act, Glax.
Right.
So, Eracts.
Eracts.
Erects.
Your erratic Eracts.
Yeah. And then I'll give you my P-Racts as well.
P-Racts. All right.
Oh, yeah, it's time for the Glax.
All right. Welcome to your episode on I Am Unicorn. This is Glee's, this is the second episode of Glee's third season and the 46th overall. This episode premiered on September 27th, 2011, just a couple days before my B-Day.
Heck yeah.
2 days. Took me a second to do that math. It's not hard math.
I heard December and I was like,
September.
Am I gravely mistaken about when your birthday is?
Nope. I'm a Libra. Also, your nephew is like very, very close
day
to mine.
After you.
I know.
And we're almost same year. Twins. Day after, same yeah. year. Mm-hmm. You grew very fast.
I did. My parents fed and watered me good. Okay, so this episode was directed by Brad Falchuk and written by, can you guess?
Is it one of the three?
Uh-huh.
Oh, gall. Honestly, it's got some funny moments. I'll say Ian Brennan.
You're wrong.
It's Ryan Murphy?
It is.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's take a look at these glocks. I've never seen them in my freaking life. Okay, so the songs we have in this show, in this episode, pardon me, are Somewhere from West Side Story, performed by Rachel and Shelby. This is Rachel's third duet with Shelby. That's super fun. So although Idina Menzel is credited as a featured artist for her performance on I Dreamed a Dream and Funny Girl and Poker Face in season one, she wasn't credited for Somewhere on Amazon or iTunes. I'm not sure why that was. It says the reason remains unknown.
That's bizarre.
Yeah. But Idina Menzel has sung this song a lot. Particularly, she sang it a lot on her Australian tour. And she mentioned it that she sang it on Glee, like on the tour. So always got to remember her roots.
Herself. She said, Apple Music didn't tell you this, but I'll tell you right now.
But I'll tell you right now.
I sang this on Glee.
Mm-hmm.
It was not Adele Dazeem, it was me.
Adele Dazeem. Okay, the next song we have is I'm the Greatest Star from Funny Girl, the musical. I don't know if you've heard of it before.
No.
Kurt uses something called Psy Swords, and Chris Colfer seems to be really skilled at it. And then later it was said that Chris actually wanted to use them in an episode because I guess he knows how to use those.
Yeah, he like requested to do them in the
yeah,
number.
Uh-huh.
Awesome, awesome.
This is the second Funny Girl song to be covered. This one and Don't Rain on My Parade. You know, we... Also, that's not true because yeah, we just because did she's... My Man the other, like a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. And also,
Sacred Text, you know.
Doesn't Shelby sing Funny Girl in theatricality?
Yes. Who wrote this?
Get out. Get out.
See, that's the thing. And that's why you're not allowed to use Wikipedia as a source on your essays, mm-hmm. kids. This is why.
Teaching moment. Your teachers are
these
correct.
Are not to be peer-reviewed.
It wasn't a doctor who went on there and said that this was the second Funny Girl number to be covered on Glee. It was some rando, probably 20-something, who went in there and lied to the world.
Literally. And then we have Something's Coming from West Side Story, performed by Blaine. And this is the first Blaine solo without backup. And the third one without the warblers. So the other ones are like, I'm not going to teach your boyfriend how to dance with you. And it's not unusual. Mm-hmm. So he had backup for those ones. This is his first like solo.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then
also, did you say it's his third overall without the warblers?
I think so.
Is that what Glee Wiki says?
Yes.
They're wrong again.
What is up with Glee Wiki today?
It's not unusual. Not going to teach your boyfriend. Don't you want me? Don't you want me, baby? There's three right there. This is at least his fourth. Glee Wiki?
I know. Well, hear me out. Usually, I at least like look at these and think about them.
This is on the sacred text, you guys.
This is on me, you guys. I'm turning in this essay like 2 minutes before the deadline. Not doing well. I really like haven't even like.
She just copied and pasted full paragraphs from the research.
Yeah, but I put like quotes around it and I added a source, hoping no one would notice. But it like takes up a whole page, you know. Oh my gosh. And then unreleased on here, it says, I am a shining star by Glee, sung by Shelby Corcoran and Sugar Mata. So that's on here.
The vocal warm up.
I am a shining star.
I love that song.
That's my impression of Idina Menzel. Did you like it?
I loved it. Loved it.
Obviously we have Idina Menzel back as Shelby Corcoran this episode. Woof. Let me look at it. Okay. So this episode is revealed that Blaine is a junior. It's revealed that Blaine is a junior. But I guess it said that he was a senior before in Silly Love Songs. I guess that's what Glee Wiki says, but I don't know what their track record is today.
I feel like we would have picked up on that because we had a long discussion about how his age was inconsistent.
Yeah. Which like, I think that is true. I think his age is pretty inconsistent and I wouldn't put it past it. To say something weird.
But I would put it past us to have not noticed that.
I mean, we don't notice a lot of stuff.
Name one thing.
Everything.
That's accurate.
Yeah. I swear half of our emails are like, can't believe you didn't talk about my favorite moment. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. I'm only one person.
But honestly, GleeWiki's on thin ice, so I don't take their word for that.
Literally. Don't shoot the fucking messenger, you guys. This is GleeWiki. In Journey, Rachel asks Shelby to come and teach McKinley, which she declines at the time. Really crazy.
Yeah. Her flesh and blood, her daughter,
yeah,
is like, hi, mom who reached out to me and said you wanted to get to know me, you could come teach at my school. You could be co-directors. We could spend time together. And Shelby's like, oof, you know.
Oof.
I gotta go.
But for the right cash, I'd do anything.
But for that green, I'm there in a second.
Literally. I mean, I hear that.
Super villain.
So you know that clown pig drawing?
Mm-hmm.
Really crazy. Brad Falchuk and Diana Agron actually drew that.
Weird pairing.
I know, right? Maybe they're like bros. Like, maybe. They're just like hanging out. But Diana Agron totally seems like someone to me that is like artsier than you would think. Like, yeah. Everything I learn about her, I'm like, oh, I don't think I would have pinned that on her. Like how she has like her like alter ego is Charlie.
Yeah. Was it Diana who drew that or was it Charlie?
Ugh.
The real question.
I'll never know. So Rachel, I don't know if you've heard of her.
I haven't.
She said that she wanted to sing I Feel Pretty because that she sounds awesome singing that song. Really crazy because she already sang that song.
That's true.
Yeah.
With Queen Bee, Queen Fabre. For some reason, just my mind was like, what if this glact was, Rachel says she wants to sing I Feel Pretty because she sounds really awesome on that song, but actually she doesn't.
Yeah.
That was just
that's what it says here on Glee Wiki, but I thought it was rude, so I just added in my own. Will calls the students, specifically Puck, Kurt, and Mercedes by their surnames for the first time ever. He has referred to Puck as Puckerman before, but he's never said that to his face until this episode. And he called Mercedes Jones, and then he called Kurt Hummel. Interesting.
Dang.
I feel like I had, oh my God, so many professors in school who always called me Knatzer. Always, 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 always. The other day I ran into a professor in the grocery store, yelled at me in the middle of a grocery store, said, Knatzer! And he yelled at me. I was very embarrassed.
The only person I know that calls me All Red is friend of the podcast, Mikel.
She does.
She does call me All Red. I think she might be the only
one. She calls me Knatzer as well. Maybe that's just like her deal.
She's just trying, she just wants to be a little more like Will Schuster.
I do like it when people call me by my last name. Specifically when they say it correctly and they call me by my last name. I like that.
Yeah, when they're like, Canaster.
Yeah.
Like, that's me.
Oh my God. Puck is wearing the same shirt that he wore when he sung the song Beth. When he meets Beth Corcoran in this episode. Isn't that crazy?
That's called consistency.
Well, Glee Wiki says that this is most likely a coincidence, but it could be for sentimental reasons.
Well, hear me out. I think the writers of the show are dumb and they don't remember anything. But I think it's very possible that the like wardrobe and props department do put some thought into things.
I think so.
So I think that very well could have been planned.
I think so.
I think Ryan Murphy had no idea that that was happening.
No.
But
this is the only second episode of a season in which a controversial performance by the New Directions is not performed at a school assembly.
Whoa.
The ones preceding this are Push It, Toxic, and Gimme More.
Gimme More.
Is I think that's four. Soon. Yeah, yeah.
That's season four. Whoa.
Spoiler. I know, right?
I mean, don't tell me because we'll get there when we get there, but what the heck are season five and six's controversial performances?
I think I have a feeling is what they are.
I have no idea. Yeah. You know what?
Don't tell Stay us. Tuned. Don't spoil that.
Stay tuned.
While talking to his dad, Kurt mentions Kate Hudson, who later appears as Cassandra July, Rachel's dance teacher.
Once again, our theory that Glee takes place in a universe where every single one of these people is a clone of a celebrity and they're all living in a laboratory called Lime, Ohio.
Exactly.
Because Kate Hudson is real, Idina Menzel is real, Kristen Chenoweth is real. They did Hairspray last week, so Matthew Morrison is real somewhere out there.
Yep.
Come on. Come on.
Come on. Those are your glacks, baby.
Oh, incredible. Thank you so much for preparing those glacks.
I know, you know me.
I can tell you put a lot of effort into them.
I did. I did. Honestly, it... Hear me out. as a person with learning disabilities, it does take more effort for me to read them on the fly than it does for me to copy and paste them into a document and read them before.
Hey-o.
So you, yes, you're welcome. I did put a lot of effort into that.
Have you ever, though, like, forgotten about an assignment and completely winged it and then had the teacher say something about, like, thank you so much for being so prepared, and you're like, oh, well, congratulations to me.
I've specifically done that with, like, a lot of monologues.
Mm-hmm.
And people are like, you are so real. And I was like, are you kidding me? I memorized that this morning. What am I like when I, like, take time on things?
My favorite is I have a fake play that I won't say the name of.
Yes.
That doesn't exist, that I use for monologues that I make up.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you just can't find a good monologue.
I hear you.
And one time I went into an audition.
That's one of my absolute favorite things about you, very genuinely. I love that about you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
One time I went in an audition at our school, and it was for a directing class. It was like to be in one of their final, final projects. And I made up the monologue, and like the professor and all the students were like, that was such a good monologue for you. Oh my gosh, that was so great. That was perfect for you. And in my brain, I was like, thank you. I literally just made it up.
You didn't make it up on the fly, though, right?
No,
you
write it. I wrote it that morning, cool. And then I went in and did it.
Cool. Oh my gosh, you're crazy. It goes a little something like this. Jesus Christ, the pretension. My friend.
And let's just freaking look at the canvas for another 2 weeks. Let's not paint anything. Let's just look. That is the only monologue I have ever found from an actual play that I did not write that I like. And Lena always makes fun of me because I use it for every audition.
It's from the play Red. It's based on Rothko the painter. Yeah. It's a very good play. A play that I love, but...
But you have helped me with a lot of self-tapes where I am just like, the pretension. Jesus Christ, the pretension.
I'm going to call out some friends from high school. We always did one-act competitions in high school. And I did a one-act, and my friend also directed a one-act. And he did a one-act version of Red.
Mm-hmm.
And he casted a friend, a mutual friend of ours. She played Ken in, like, in just the one act. And because it's just like a public school in Utah, they didn't want to swear.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm pretty sure that when it got to that line, it was like, and the pretension. Oh my goodness, the pretension. It was so funny. And I was like, can it be like a UGG or something? Like the pretension. Oh, the pretension. Like something like that. And they were like, no. And I was like, okay. It's like, I'm not your director.
Jeez Louise, the pretension.
The pretension. My goodness gracious, the pretension.
Hear me out. I am of the mind that, and I mean, like, obviously, like, there's copyright laws and stuff, and you need to respect the script. But I am of the mind that, like, it is possible to censor things and still have them be as powerful.
I think so.
But you gotta pay attention to how you're censoring it.
I know.
Because, oh my goodness, does not have the same effect.
Like... I can't even, like, definitely. I completely agree. Mm-hmm. My gosh.
Speaking of censoring, you want to hear recap?
Hell yes, I do.
Let's hit it. Okay. Here's what you missed on Glee. West Side Story auditions are in full swing, and Rachel and Kurt are gunning for Marie Antoni. Brittany runs Kurt's class president campaign, but he becomes concerned that her posters are too gay, especially after hearing the director say he's too effeminate to play Tony. Brittany's offended, and with some encouragement from Santana, decides to run herself. Will starts a show choir boot camp with the help of Mike for members of the club who need help dancing. Shelby's back in Lima after being hired by Sugar's dad to start a new club at McKinley. She wants Puck and Quinn to be a part of Best Life, but tells Quinn she has to clean up her act first. Quinn rejoins Glee Club and drops her skank image, but tells Puck she's only doing it to get full custody of Beth. Blaine auditions for Bernardo to not hurt Kurt's feelings, but after his song is asked to read for Tony. And that's what you missed on Glee!
Woo! All right, Ian. What'd you think of this episode?
All right, Lena. What did I think of this episode? That's a good question.
I know. You know me. Hard hitter.
Oh, love it.
I always come in here. I'm a good journalist.
That's true. The best journalist. Right off the bat, before I say this first thing, of course we need to acknowledge the fact that they are doing West Side Story at a school where almost everyone is white. And then beyond that fact, there's actually only one Latinx character in this whole show.
Yes.
So that, you know, is a big issue. And Beast has so many lines in this episode.
I know.
Where they're like, well, Rachel's Jewish, and I think that could help with the Puerto Rican thing. You guys.
Yeah.
But the West Side Story of it all aside, I love a storyline, and this is like a multi-episode storyline that is actually about like the process of a High School Musical.
Yeah, me too.
Because the last two seasons, there was like a whisper of Cabaret in season one. And then Rocky Horror got like a whole episode in season two, but it was just Will being like, okay, my favorites are playing the leads and go.
Yeah.
And it's fun to see a plot that is like the auditioning process and everyone getting really stressed, and like especially the Kurt plot of him really wanting this character and like feeling like people don't see that character in him and having like a real problem with that. And I don't love this episode, but I do like a lot of stuff about it.
Okay.
What about you?
I love this episode.
Hey, Oyo.
There's so much good stuff in the episode. Mm-hmm. And while I totally agree, there's so much bad stuff. It is an episode that I think is pretty fun the whole time too.
Yes.
You know, like even the shit that is like so insufferable is like fun to watch, you know. But yeah, I don't think we can even talk about this episode without acknowledging they should not be doing West Side Story.
We can't talk about like the next four episodes.
I know, and you know what? And we will continue to say it because I think it's important. How do you want to break down this episode?
Okay, this episode has like two very clear, like they're completely different things going on, which is the whole like Puck Quinn with Shelby and Beth. Mm-hmm. Like all the Quinn stuff, essentially.
Yes.
And then the West Side Story stuff.
Yes. But also election stuff.
Yes. That's the thing, is the West Side Story stuff encapsulates a lot.
Okay, cool.
Where it has like Kurt's election stuff and also like boot camp. And so I for sure think that we should talk about the Quinn stuff as its own plot line.
Yes.
It's how we break down West Side Story.
Yeah. That is the question. There's the rub. For sure, yes, for sure.
There's a rub.
Do we want to talk about the Quinn stuff first? We'll just party on.
Let's do the Quinn stuff.
Dude, the death of Skank Quinn.
We hardly knew her. An episode and 3/4 is all we got.
Seriously.
Sheila only ever got 3 lines. Goodbye.
She didn't even... She pisses me off. Skank Quinn forever.
We didn't even get to see her be Joan Jett.
We also didn't even get a song with Skank Quinn.
Yeah, no, that's legitimately so dumb.
Are you kidding me?
So
dumb. You're going to give me like punk rock Quinn. You're not going to give me any. First of all, we've had pop punk Tina for a long time. Where's all the pop punk shit? And then we have like anarchist Quinn Fabre, and she's not going to give me any rock songs.
Come on.
I'm pissed. I demand retribution. Pissed. No, for real. Pisses me off.
No, it's dumb.
But I love her. What'd you think?
Okay. So, you know, Satan's back. What an introduction. When she's
God, it took me a second to realize what you were talking about.
I'm not talking about Skank Quinn. I'm talking about Shelby Corcoran.
I was like trying to rack my brain. I was like, what's going on? You're talking about the true villain of this television show. Mm-hmm. Much worse than
truly
anyone.
The Mephisto of the Glee universe. Shelby Corcoran.
The Mephisto.
But like, the introduction of her, where they're in the teacher's lounge and Will is making coffee and she goes, "You still make a mean cup of coffee?" What is that?
I know.
Is that an inside joke?
I know. I've never seen them drink coffee together.
It was such a weird, like, icebreaker thing to do.
And it's also, that coffee is for everyone, and it's just like, it's just a coffee maker in a break room.
He's just pouring it out.
He's not like making some sort of cappuccino latte art bullshit. Mean cup of coffee. Shelby, get the fuck out of my school.
The way she's posed, you know, Shelby cares so much about her image that she's in constant emotional distress about it.
I know. Like that poor woman.
A normal person would walk in and like, if they wanted to do something beyond like, hey, they would like tap them on the shoulder to like surprise them.
Yeah.
But she's like, oh my gosh. Okay, I have to get the power in this situation immediately. So one hand on the table and I'm going to lean on it and he's making coffee. So what could I say as like a cool, sexy icebreaker about coffee? Like it is so forced, and like all of it is like such a conscious choice is embarrassing.
It's bad.
She's trying too hard to be cool and chill. That being said, I don't like Shelby. Well, and there are reasons in this episode. But with the Quinn stuff, Quinn has got a bad season two in the sense that she didn't get nearly any good storylines.
Yeah.
They truly were like, oh, frick, I don't know what to do with this girl.
Like, make her date somebody.
I think this episode brings up such an exciting plot for Quinn, which is Shelby being like, I want you to be a part of Beth's life.
Yes.
And Quinn grappling with that, with having her like biological child back in her life, but having it be the daughter of someone else and kind of regretting giving the baby up, I think is a very exciting story possibility for her. We'll see how it pans out.
Yeah, absolutely.
But in this episode, I actually really liked it. And Diana Agron has some like fantastic scenes. And I was like, oh yeah, I forgot. You're an incredible actor. I wouldn't have remembered because they didn't let you do any acting last season.
Literally.
Yeah. I hate Shelby just as a rule, but I do.
But you are excited about the possibilities with the stuff. I agree.
Yes, yes, yes.
I agree. I do. I am excited about this. It does beg the question. Every time Shelby comes back onto the show, which has only been, you know, the two or three times that like she's been like made reappearances, the legality of all of this trips me up. Adoptions are not as like simple as the show makes them seem. And I swear it pisses me off so much, especially with Rachel. First of all, Rachel, first of all, the fact that Shelby is even allowed in the same building as this poor child is bonkers bananas crazy to me. Makes no sense. And especially after the shit that Shelby put her through in season one and the fact that she's back, if I were her dad's, I would beat this woman's ass. Like, it pisses me off. It really bothers me.
Jeff Goldblum's foot is coming for your throat, Shelby Cole.
Brian Stokes Mitchell is gonna literally punch you right in the tummy. I don't know. But it really
is such a gentle way to say that. You gotta punch you right in the tummy.
It really bothers me. Obviously, it's different with Shelby because Shelby is like the legal guardian of Beth. She is Beth's mom. Obviously, all of that's a little different. But all of that bothers me because Quinn probably had to like go through like legal measures. Puck probably had to do the same. And like, who knows what that said? Who know? Like, I don't know. I don't think we ever talked about it. But like, I assume it was like a closed thing, and it feels really manipulative, like Shelby coming in and being like, hey, get your life together and you can see the fucking fruit of your loom. You know, it really bothers me.
I also,
the fruit of your womb. I said loom.
Yeah, your underwear.
I'm sorry, you guys.
But also, I think that might mean the same thing. Oh no, fruit of the loom means clothes.
Yeah,
specifically. Wow, I don't know I don't know what a loom is.
Because a loom is like, you know, did you ever get one of those in Animal Crossing? No. What? You don't have okay.
What is a loom?
A loom is like something that like makes fabric. So you like put a bunch of like threads and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And then it's like a then it like comes together to like make
Well, a Quinn piece also of made that little dress that Beth wears, so it's also the fruit of her loom.
I hear you.
And
totally.
She's like, I want full custody of that dress.
I said what I said, you guys. Stop roasting me.
So I do like this plotline, like the idea of this plotline. I think it's exciting.
Yes.
Here are some things that piss me off. All of the stuff about Quinn being like a rebel and going off the deep end is also based in her looks and how she dresses.
Yeah.
And
everyone's
it's made,
like, what's wrong with you?
And it's made explicitly clear that like she has started smoking and is smoking like a dangerous amount of cigarettes, that she's like cutting class. They mentioned last episode that she's dating a 40-year-old. Like, these are all legitimate things that are like
that
Quinn,
that raise concern.
Yeah,
for
like,
sure.
We're worried about you. And yet all anyone talks about is like, your hair is pink now.
You have a nose ring.
Like, bigger fish to fry.
I know. I completely
Very dumb.
Agree.
Also, does Shelby Corcoran not have a cell phone? She just like blind ambushes both Quinn and Rachel in this episode.
My God. Will being like, have you like talked to Puck or Quinn or your fucking biological daughter, Rachel? Mm-hmm. She's like, I'll reach out.
And it's like, you are already working here.
That wasn't the top of your list of shit to like check on?
Yeah, like you're at your first day of work. They could have already seen you today.
And I, like, there's this moment you see Rachel sees Shelby for the first time and her heart like drops out of her ass. Mm-hmm. She's so upset.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, I almost had to go to therapy because of you. Which, homegirl, I thought you definitely did. I thought you, the therapist moved into your home.
Oh, that's true.
Which is just not true. That's true. And also, she should go to therapy. We should all go to therapy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Shelby just truly a surprise attack. She sets up this whole sting operation with Puck to like get Quinn into the classroom to talk to her.
Which, why are we surprise, she sent the Winter Soldier ruin Rachel's life the other day.
Like, Shelby, try sending an email.
I know.
She's like, if I talk to someone, in order to talk to someone, I have to emotionally manipulate them. It's all I know how to do.
Also, like, not to bring up Rachel's dads again, but like, I would think, like, if I was in Shelby's situation, which I fucking wouldn't be. But like I would never do the shit that she does. But like, if my kid, if my like biological kid and her parents were somewhere, I think I would reach out to the parents first and be like, hey, this is what's going on. Are you guys comfortable with this?
Yeah.
And odds are they'd say no because Shelby is the devil.
Mm-hmm.
But at least you'd get like a clear answer and not just like ask for forgiveness later. That's like a child's life. Really bothers me. Really bothers me.
Another thing that pisses me off about the Shelby and Quinn interaction this episode is she's talking to Quinn and she's like, I want you to be a part of Beth's life because I know what it's like to have given a child up for adoption. Every single day I would think about Rachel. I would see her in the street. I would wonder what she was doing. Wow. Well, you met her and 10 minutes later you said you didn't want her in your life.
You saw her. You're going to see her in a couple minutes.
Seriously.
What, are you going to punch her in the face?
Like, you should talk.
Is she chopped liver now?
You should talk a big game about how much you missed Rachel, considering that you have not even told her that you're working at her high school.
This woman is the villain of this show.
She
is. I remember on one of our TikToks, like, about, I think it was Theatricality, that episode.
Uh-huh.
And it was, someone commented, like, why are they hating on Shelby? And it's like,
watch this show.
That's the thing, though, is this. She is not the villain of the show, which is bonkers bananas crazy to me because it's framed like she's not. It's very Will. It's very Will, you know, where like the writers love Idina Menzel. Idina Menzel is a great performer, but like they make her do the most egregious shit.
And we're supposed to be like, heck yeah, like, Shelby, you go.
Oh my God.
Girl boss. A working mother. We love it.
Single mom power. No, for real. She's the best teacher show choir can. What?
She's the show choir can buy.
Thank you. Sometimes my mind doesn't work that way.
You meant money can buy, though.
Yeah, that's what
yes.
I meant.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Show choir teacher that money can buy. Took me a second. I got there.
Which, once again, also exciting plot point that Shelby gets tracked down by the Mottas.
And listen.
If this
we are loud and proud about how the Trouble Tones rock. And
who are the Trouble Tones?
I've never heard of them. But none of that has to do with the devil.
Well, and also, these would be very exciting plot lines if the writers acknowledged how awful Shelby is. That it was like, she's coming back.
Because hear me out. If they were like, oh, Shelby's the devil.
Mm-hmm. Like, Rachel's abusive birth mother is coming back.
I would watch the fuck out of that TV show.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Also, speaking of her being manipulative,
uh-huh.
The way that when Quinn is like, can I please see a picture of Beth? And she's like, yeah, here she is with Puck. That could be you.
That could be you.
Every little thing she does, emotionally manipulative.
Every little thing she does is emotionally manipulative. Everything she do just sends me to therapy. Seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we also have the Quinn moment where she confronts Will. How do you like that moment? How do you like them apples?
Okay. The scene leading up to it, that is Sue making a documentary about how the arts ruined Quinn's life, is very funny.
Funny.
Very funny. This scene with Will is so upsetting.
I agree.
And here's the deal. He does make some valid points. But, dude, she is a 17-year-old. She went through all this stuff when she was like 15, 16. Like, she is a child going through some serious trauma. Mm-hmm. And this is very clearly a call for help.
Yes.
A cry for help. And the way that he is just like, he literally says to her, "So now you're a train wreck. Congratulations." Like, how do you think this is helping her? She is a child and like does not have the support of her dad at all. Mm-mm. Who knows what things are like with her mom? Like, come on.
Yeah, we have not heard a whisper except when she went prom queen, when mm-hmm. we saw her mom.
Yeah.
Like, we don't know shit about what their home life is like.
Yeah. It's just like Will talks to her and like, to start this off, the points I think that Will makes that are valid is that he says, you always talk about how the Glee Club ruined your life. And yet you getting pregnant had nothing to do with the Glee Club. And when you got kicked out of your house, who was there for you? The Glee Club. When you got kicked out of Finn's house, who was there for you? Mercedes, who was in the Glee Club. And like, you never offered your thanks. You never showed your gratitude. And you've just been trying to sabotage the club. Those are all very valid.
Valid. Yes.
She's a child and he talks to her as if she is like his peer.
Yes.
And it is like, I'm sorry, she's immature. And like,
of course,
obviously that doesn't mean that like she gets away scot-free and doesn't accept responsibility for things. But like, you have to like get on her level and like relate to her and like figure out what's really going on. You can't just like rip into her like this.
I absolutely agree.
The worst.
I completely agree. Like, obviously, there is a lot to be concerned about with what Quinn's going through right now. Mm-hmm. None of which have anything to do with her hair and her nose ring and the way she's choosing to dress. But even still, it's a way that she's like finding to cope. And shouldn't we like be looking at that first rather than like freaking out at her? And obviously she's being manipulated by Sue in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why aren't we more upset with Sue that like, you know, made Quinn do this essentially? Like, obviously Quinn is mad at the Glee Club. And I think you're right. There is so much, so many valid things that Will said, especially about like saying thank you to Mercedes. Where's that relationship?
Yeah.
That's the writer's fault.
I know, it's 100% the writer's covering their own butt.
They're like, literally.
Oh yeah, and then you stop being friends with Mercedes. Dexter. It's not that we forgot that we wrote that into the script. It's that Quinn wasn't grateful.
Yeah, totally. But totally, like, the girl needs a friend. Mm-hmm. And she needs especially an adult and an advocate to like be there for her. And Will is a terrible teacher once again. So what did we expect from him? I didn't expect much. In all of the world, so far.
Other thoughts about the Quinn plot line. A, Puck and Shelby keep talking about, well, Puck says to Quinn, he's like, Beth looks so much like you. Well, the old you. So blonde?
Like, yeah.
Quinn didn't, like, get plastic surgery.
That baby doesn't have a nose ring?
Yeah, like, she looks Puckerman, quite literally
get out of here.
Exactly the same, except that her hair is pink.
And also, Quinn did get a nose job. Hello, Lucy Boosie.
True. True.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what he meant when he said the old you. He meant Lucy Caboosie.
Yeah.
Like, she looks just like Lucy Caboosie.
Maybe. Honestly, that's sweet.
Also, why, when Puck just shows up to Shelby's apartment unannounced, does she immediately let him in?
Is it a thing that people ring the doorbell multiple times? I'm genuinely asking.
Not unless it's an emergency.
Yeah. I have always thought that that is like a really impolite thing to do.
Yeah.
And also, that's what murderers do. What's that movie we watched the other day?
The Strangers?
The Strangers. That's what they did.
True, true.
They knocked several times.
True, true.
That movie was pretty scary.
But like, Shelby says to him, she's like, what are you doing here? Why'd you show up at my house? And yet the first thing she does is step aside and gesture for him to come in.
I know. I'd be like, this is like, inappropriate. See you later.
Your mouth is saying one thing. Your body's saying another thing, Shelby.
My body.
Come on.
Seriously. I know.
She's the worst.
She's the worst. Like, a person with healthy boundaries would be like, hello, biological father of my child that I have not given permission to just show up here. And also, student at the school I'm teaching at.
Yeah,
see you later.
Let's meet, like, at a park.
Yeah.
And you can meet your daughter.
Totally.
But I will say, I do genuinely think it's sweet that she wants Puck and Quint to be in Best Life.
I think so, too. Yeah. And I think, like, even as a person who, like, is someone's biological mother who has regrets about what happened, like, wanting to, like, you know, be better in, like, her in this cycle, I think is good.
Yeah.
Is she a manipulative butthole? Hey, H, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Do you have any more thoughts about the Queen Bee Skank Quinn, the death of Skank Quinn?
We barely knew her.
Barely knew her.
Barely knew her.
Hear me out. Skank Quinn, I have no issues with. The line, now that like I've seen the full run of Skank Quinn, the line she has to Puck at the end where she is like, we're getting full custody of Beth, whatever it takes. This is the jumping off point to the plot line where I am like, so what are we doing now?
Yeah.
So stay tuned for the next few episodes, but you heard it here first, Ian likes Skank Quinn.
You heard it here second, Lena loves Skank Quinn.
Ayo-ayo.
Ayo-ayo. I had purple hair last year, did you know?
Oh yeah, you did.
Only for a couple weeks because it washed out so fast. Dude, if you guys have colored hair, my heart goes out to you. Got a shower in cold water.
Yeah, that stuff is hard to maintain.
I know. I'm way too low maintenance for that. Should we talk about the West Side Story of it all?
Yes. Where do you want to start?
We could start with Rachel. We could start with Kurt. We could start with...
What if we started with Boot Camp just because it's so weird and also very short?
Booty Camp?
Yeah.
I know. First of all, the fact that this is a mandatory thing for select members of the club that, frankly, it doesn't make any sense to me because... I don't think Mercedes Jones is a worse dancer than Rachel. In fact, I'd say she's a better dancer than Rachel. Why the fuck isn't Rachel at booty camp?
Because the show wants us to believe that Rachel's a good dancer, even though Lea Michele isn't. Because like, they talk a big game about how she like went to all these ballet classes and stuff growing up.
It's not a big deal, you know? Like, make her a bad dancer. It bothers me. And like... Mercedes, I think, is the only, until Quinn joins, the only girl who's in booty camp. Mm-hmm. It bothers me. I don't like it. And the fact that it's mandatory specifically for bad dancers hurts my feelings a little bit. Because it feels like pointed and gross.
Yes.
Which, like, if you're going to do booty camp, which that's fine. Make it mandatory for everyone.
Here's my thoughts on it.
What?
Is someone blackmailing Will if he doesn't win nationals? Why?
Someone must, because it blows my mind.
Like, someone must have some dirt on him because the emotional distress he is putting his students through for a title that, like, frankly means nothing.
Nothing.
Like, if they lose nationals, as far as we know, there are no consequences. They just did last season. They have lost nationals
before.
And there were no consequences. So why is he doing this? The fact that booty camp is every day after practice, this is a club.
I know.
They are not being graded. What's going on here? I disagree. It should not be mandatory. It should be, hey, we're doing a dance booty camp every day after practice. Mike and I will be there. We would love it if you guys would come.
Which sounds way more like how like dance conditioning goes in like school.
Especially like I did high stuff like
that. Yeah, absolutely. And they put it like in like a lunch period and they're like, come if you want to learn the dances to this thing. I'll see you later.
Yeah, like if you want to improve your dancing, like we are having this class, we'd love for you to show up. And the way that Will is just like, all right, entire Glee Club, I'm about to shout out the people in this class who suck at dancing and just points them out in front of everyone.
Yeah.
Dude.
It's messed up.
Like, hear me out. I don't know why he wants to win nationals so bad.
I know. It is perplexing to me. And maybe I'm just someone who, like, doesn't understand, like, especially art competitions. It's not really something that computes in my mind. Art is subjective to me. I don't get it. Maybe that's why. But, like, this whole we have to win nationals thing when, like, they've only placed one time.
I know. He sounds, you know, who he sounds like? Shelby Corcoran. Ugh. Like, truly, the stuff that we would hear about vocal adrenaline and how much they would prepare for nationals is like what Will is doing. And we're supposed to be like, this is great.
It's like, oh, since they're not on an IV drip, they're fine.
But like, you know, Finn is a bad dancer. Yeah. That's no secret. And like, you want to do well. And so you do this optional.
Some extra help. That's awesome.
You do this optional boot camp and then you can kind of like pull them aside and be like, hey, if you come to boot camp, I could really work one-on-one with you with this. Because honestly, when we see the scene of Will working with Finn at boot camp, he does a very good job.
He does. Where
Finn is getting all frustrated and Will even says, which I actually like this line. Yeah, Will says to Finn, he's like, Finn, which of the two of us knows more about dance? And Finn is like, you do. And he says, and I know you can do this.
Yeah,
and that is like very affirming and very positive, and it does seem like a very helpful thing. So great, have it be optional. And if there's kids who like really need the help and aren't attending, kind of just like have a one-on-one and like suggest they start going. Yeah.
And especially like Finn obviously has a desire to do well.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's not doing West Side Story because he wants to like get good. He wants to go to booty camp. Like he has a desire to win nationals.
Yeah.
So like I think Will is weird in thinking that like people wouldn't want the help, because you also have like Blaine showing up because he wants to,
yeah,
and then Quinn volunteering to come, which
because she wants full custody. Because
she wants full custody of Beth,
and you know that the legal system is going to be like, okay, your case against Miss Corcoran. Well, I can see you attended your show choir's booty camp, so I'm going to take your word for whatever you say.
Yes, I can see you really cleaned up your act. Specifically your dancing act.
Our decision on if you get full custody of your child or not comes down to an 8 count of improvisational dance. 5, 6, 7, 8.
Yeah. It's a tight 8 counts. I love that.
Also, how much of this booty camp just involves watching Will and Mike dance together?
Oh my God, in slow motion.
What? And the moves they're doing, there's a move where Will does like a hoop with his arms and then Mike like pretends to dive through it. What competition are they going to perform that at? What is that move?
I know.
Also, during that move, you can see that Matthew Morrison has a lower back tattoo.
Oh, yes, I have seen that. What is it of? Is it like a...
I don't know. I think I tried like to find out.
Thing. I'm going to Google it.
Oh, he has a Chinese symbol on the small of his back. But I don't know.
Of course he does.
I don't know what it's a Chinese symbol for. So who knows?
I'll be waiting. But yeah,
that transition, it happens twice. But the transition of them just dancing in slow motion and then cut to everyone else literally just sitting there.
And especially like the dance moves they're doing, especially in that first booty camp practice, it's like grapevines for like a million years. They all know how to do grapevines.
Okay. Do you have any more booty camp thoughts?
I don't.
Great. What do you want to talk about first with West Side Story?
Should we talk about the election / Kurt?
Yes.
And then we'll round it out with Rachel / we could start with Rachel.
I think maybe start with Rachel because there's not a lot going on with Rachel.
Not a lot going on with Rachel. There never is. Just kidding. Rachel's pretty insufferable to me in this episode. Mostly with when they announce like the directors of West Side Story. Mm-hmm. And when they bombard Artie in front of the whole class, they should have like pulled him aside and like, yeah, do you want to like direct this? Because they kind of were just like, Artie, I think you should direct. And then Artie was like, I don't really know. And then the whole club pressured him into taking it, which like I'm sure Artie would do great. But like, come on, you
Why
guys.
Why does Will never, ever, ever speak to any of his students about anything one-on-one? He always just throws it on them in front of the entire club.
He doesn't care about what happens behind closed doors because he's just going to yell at them.
True. He's just going to say, you're a train wreck now. Congratulations. If he talks to them one-on-one. Anyways, I don't have problems with Rachel in this episode.
You don't think that monologue she says is like super insufferable?
The one about like Barbara not directing until she's 40 in Yentl and like she couldn't direct yet because she's not that old?
Yeah, and like all of it.
I thought it was funny. Okay. Especially when Brittany goes, ugh, I hate you.
What else does she say? Oh, yeah, no, I do love that.
Yeah, no, I like Rachel in this episode fine.
I don't think Rachel should be Maria.
Well, no. Shelby truly just shows up, and clearly because Shelby walks in and Rachel says something about like, oh, I heard you started another club at McKinley. Clearly, Rachel already heard about.
Yeah.
Like, she did not hear from Shelby that Shelby was at McKinley. She just heard in passing. They're like, oh my gosh, Sugar Mata's dad is starting a new glee club and it's taught by your biological mother.
Dude, I have had worse reactions to hearing that exes are in town. You know what I mean? Where I'm like, are you kidding me? And I freak out. And I couldn't even imagine living the life that Rachel has lived with the trauma that Shelby has put Rachel through. And then just like hearing through the fucking grapevine that she's back in town and then hasn't said a word to her.
And then she just walks into the auditorium and starts coaching her.
Yeah.
Doesn't like, once again, Shelby, shoot her an email.
And also, Rachel clearly doesn't want to be around her. Mm-hmm. She's like, obviously, like, you don't, like, family doesn't mean shit to you. Like, you don't want to be around me. I get that. Like, we've already had this conversation, Shelby. I don't want to do this. And then Shelby, like, doesn't take no for an answer and continues to, like, give her advice.
Mm-hmm. And, like, I understand that the writers wanted it to be kind of a feeling of, like, Shelby, like, it was supposed to improve their relationship that Shelby, like, really, because she is, like, such a great coach, like, really does help Rachel with her audition and, like, really sees the potential in Rachel. Like, I can see that that was their intention and it was supposed to be, like, kind of a heartwarming moment, but it also just reaffirms Rachel's belief that she's only as valuable as her talent because Shelby did not want a relationship with her when they had a conversation, did not want to go to dinner with her, nothing. And yet when she is getting ready for an audition, that's the only time that Shelby pays attention to her is when she's like, oh, you'll be a star if you do this. Oh, you should do this song. And then Rachel gets reinforced the idea of like, this oh, people will only love me if I'm the most talented person in the room.
Ugh.
Shelby,
this poor girl.
You're messing this girl up for life. Also, very presumptuous of Shelby to just start singing with her.
I know. I'd be pissed. I'd be like, this is mine.
And the song she chose for her to sing also has very manipulative lyrics where the whole song is about like, you know, somewhere there's a place where we can have a relationship and we can be happy together. Here. Like, you know, Rachel, we eventually will find a place where, like, we're happy and we're close. Like, Shelby, if you don't want to be part of her life, just don't be part of her life. Stop stringing her along. Stop singing these songs about how, like, keep holding out hope because somewhere there's a place where we will have a mother-daughter relationship.
Yep.
Ugh.
Agreed.
Also, I think this is a good performance of this song.
Yeah.
This is not an insult. It sounds very much like a 90s Celine Dion ballad.
It does not sound like West Side Story.
It does not sound like the song in the show. And that's the thing is I think it's a lovely cover.
Yeah.
But if they were to sing this rendition of this song in West Side Story, I'd be like, what's going on?
I also don't think this would be good for an audition.
Mm-hmm.
Like doing this rendition of this song for an audition is not like the move.
Yeah. And it's.
And I get that that's not what it's for. It's specifically for so people will buy it.
Yes.
And it's more exciting if, like, Rachel and Shelby are, like, belting their full minds out. And, like, I hear you and I love that. But it's terrible for an audition.
Yeah. Like, where is the storytelling?
I know.
It is all just, like, close your eyes and yell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Silly.
Come on.
Come on.
That's all of my Rachel thoughts?
Yeah.
Bye, Rachel. So. See you next week.
See you, Rachel. I did like the scene with Rachel and Finn in the shop. Like, first of all, love that Finn is working for Bert. That's lovely. Lovely son-stepfather bonding time. I love that. And it looks like he's doing a good job and, like, is finding, like, you know, purpose and, like, belonging. And Rachel looks like she's having a good time there, too.
Also, Rachel has the line where she is like, I will not be relaxed until the cast list comes out.
Been there, sister.
Very relatable.
Literally. What she said, an emotional DEFCON 1.
Yeah.
I heard that. Dude. I agree. I think I'm done with Rachel.
Great.
Done with you, Rachel.
Great. Don't talk about... Do you want to talk about Cart?
Yes.
All right. Start us off.
Who's Cart?
Cart Hamill.
Kurt, you're talking about Kurt.
Yeah, Kurt.
It took me a minute. Yes. First of all, I think Kurt would be a great student, class president, student body president. Yeah. I don't know. I think it's class president.
I don't think they know.
I don't think they know the logistics of school government is lost on this school. It's lost on me too, but I think it's a great idea. I love opening with Brittany being like, I'm really inspired by you, Kurt, and having that like little moment with him where she's like, you had a show last year and you never lost sight of who you are. And that's someone who I would love to see in like power. And then she also says something like the football guys, I wrote it down.
The football.
I didn't write it down.
She talks about how most of the people at this school are either freaks or closeted freaks. Mm-hmm. The football player gets the job because he's popular, but he does not represent most of the student body.
Yeah, totally. Like, I loved that moment. And Brittany is like so insightful in that moment. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you are the best in the whole world. And like, you know, her saying like, you never forgot how special you are. I love that whole moment. It is so, and I love like Brittany kind of channeling her own queerness in all of this, I think, and like being inspired by Kurt living out in Proud and like being inspired by him and like getting so excited about, you know, making these posters and her, you know, I just love it. I just think it's so sweet. I just think she is such a sweetheart. And then like coupling it with Kurt, like feeling like he's, you know, too gay to like be a romantic lead is like such a fun and also sad plot point and something that I think a lot of people go through. And I'm just so here for this plot.
Yes.
You know, I love to see it. And like having the arc of Kurt like talk to his dad and then want to like do the posters. Like, you know, he's like, you know what? You're right. I am a unicorn. Who cares? And then Brittany like leaving him in the dust. I just love this whole plot. Tell me what you love about
The conversation he has with Bert, where Bert essentially tells him like, yeah, you are very gay.
Yeah.
And Kurt gets all offended. And his dad's like, that's not an insult.
No.
And Kurt says, well, I just am tired of being a unicorn. And Bert goes, well, you know what they call a unicorn without a horn? A freaking horse.
A freaking horse.
I love that line.
Exactly. And it's so sweet. And I love that moment with Bert where he's like, you know what? If there aren't roles for you, you got to freaking write them.
Mm-hmm.
Which like you and me talk about that all the time. You know who I love who does that shit?
Who?
Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Everyone, we have not forgotten when you all decided to bully.
Bitches, you slanderman Lin-Manuel Miranda.
When you bullied him off of Twitter last summer. You are on our bad side.
Especially like as a person. And like, I don't think this, but other people think this of me. I also love this plot line so much because I feel like people are always like, you can't be Belle in Beauty and the Beast because you're blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, you're out of your fucking mind. Mm-hmm. I'd be a great Belle. Mm-hmm. You know, like I just feel I identify so much with this plot point. But like, as someone who is like that, I feel very strongly that I love Lin-Manuel Miranda so much because he wasn't getting cast in musicals.
Mm-hmm.
You know what he fucking did is he wrote musicals that would be good for people like him.
Mm-hmm.
And he put himself in it.
And people were all like, people are like, it was so self-centered of him.
He wasn't getting cast in musicals.
To write a show where he was the lead. Like, I'm so sorry that he wrote one of the best musicals of all time so that because he wasn't getting opportunities, so he could have an opportunity and at the same time helped dozens of other people who also weren't getting noticed have opportunities
as
well.
Absolutely. Pisses me off to no end. Bert Hummel encompasses that whole idea in this episode where he's like, you know what? If you don't see yourself represented,
make your own art.
Because they're doing West Side Story at like a nearly all white high school. The school doesn't know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
But I love that moment. Freaking horse.
Freaking horse. I like, this is a very strong Brittany episode. I like that she is both so incredibly wise in the way that she is like telling Kurt, like, you're a unicorn, you're special, that from the beginning she knows what Bert tells Kurt.
Yeah.
Which is that all this stuff that like you are trying to hide about yourself is actually what is going to make people root for you.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, she is still oblivious and like does all these things that it's like, she is correct. Like, that Kurt needs to do what makes him special. But like, those campaign posters are bad.
They're what? And I then, love them.
And then when she's going to have the treat bags that are called Kurt Hummel's Bulging Pink Fun Sack.
I am obsessed. She's an amazing campaign manager. I would immediately vote for someone who gave me a Kurt Hummel's Bulging Pink Fun Sack. That's incredible.
And I love how like they keep that balance of her being so incredibly wise, but then also like being so oblivious to some stuff.
I just think Brandy is the best.
That exchange when they put up the posters and Kurt goes up to her and Santana and he's like, and they're all posters of him riding a unicorn. And he's like, I thought we agreed that we were going to do toned down posters. And Santana goes, this is toned down. In the first draft, the unicorn is riding you.
I know. I love that. I love how Santana is so, so chill about it as well. And she's just so proud of Brittany. Mm-hmm. Brittany also calls herself a bicorn this mm-hmm. episode. The first mm-hmm. whisper we've heard of.
She did say bicurious in season two.
She did say,
but yeah. This is the first time when it's like not bicurious, but like just straight up bi.
Yeah. Very exciting to me.
She also does say, when Kurt says, I don't know what to say, she responds, that happens to me all the time. My lips move, but only dust comes out.
Only dust comes out. I've been there. I also love the moment where Kurt is talking to Brittany and he's like, oh, I'm sorry, that was a joke. And she's like, oh, I didn't get that. Will you like nudge me in the ribs or like honk a horn next time? So funny.
Honk a horn. Brittany S. Pierce.
Brittany S. Pierce.
Okay. Do you want to talk about Kurt and Tony?
Yes.
The Kurt Tony of it all?
Yes.
Where do you want to start?
Should we start with the audition?
Okay. What did you think of the audition?
I've got a hot take for you.
What is it?
I think in a different key, this is a great audition song for Tony. Hear me out. To me, it has Something's Coming vibes.
Okay. Yeah.
I think it's the wrong key for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I think the best advice I can give for any audition piece is that it should have a range that is similar mm-hmm. to the character you're auditioning mm-hmm. for. So if that character you're auditioning for gets up to like a, you know, an A, I'm just throwing a note out there, then you should sing a song that gets close to or higher than / equal to an A. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? So in that aspect, I think it's a bad audition song. I do think it has similar vibes to Something's Coming.
Yeah.
And especially that moment when he's off the scaffolding and he's like, yes. Nobody knows this. Mm-hmm. I'm special and something is special about me. That to me is pretty Something's Coming.
Yeah.
That's my hot take. I do. I love Kurt does the most. He has someone make him a scaffolding. He shouts them out in the audition. I love him
Cassius.
For it. Cassius. Thank you, Cassius. But like, that's my hot take.
Okay. I never in a million years would cast someone as Tony with this audition.
I hear
you. And that's what makes me mad is this whole plot is like Kurt's having a really hard time because the directors are seeing him as too effeminate or like he says like too gay to play mm-hmm. a traditional romantic lead. And that's really hard for him. But I want to be like, writers, if Finn did this exact audition, I would not cast him as Tony.
Like, I think what they're going for with that is that Kurt singing a song for women is who he really is, like who he really is. And then they're all talking about how Kurt is too effeminate. Not that he can't like act straight, which I totally get what you're saying. If he like sang a song that was more similar. Yeah.
But like when you audition, you're showing yourself as that character.
Yeah.
Like I don't go into an audition to be, I don't know, like freaking, let's say sergeant of police, because that's who I'm playing. And I'm not like, here's just like a song that shows who Ian Allred is. I'm like, no, here's a song that shows that Ian Allred can be the sergeant of police.
Yes.
Like you go in and you show a song that shows that you can be Tony. And I actually really agree with what you said, that that ending part, when it all slows down, does very much feel like something's coming. But like you said, why on earth is he doing it in Barbara's key? Like, yeah, you can sing it in Barbara's key. Tony doesn't sing like that. No. So that doesn't help them see you as Tony.
Yeah.
I think the scaffolding is distracting. It's a gimmick. There is no storytelling happening. It's like when I went to an audition workshop one time, and I mean, like, here's the deal, is every casting director is different. So this is not a hard and fast rule. But this casting director specifically said, they were like, when a person comes up for the audition and they ask, can I have a chair? I immediately know I'm not hiring them. Because I'm like, if you need a gimmick to tell your story, you're not an actor. And it just, and I think like that is too harsh what that casting director said, but it does have some merit
like what,
to
you
it.
Just don't like people who sit.
Yeah. But it is like, in the audition room, you should still be able to tell the story standing up, you know? And it is like, everything he is doing is taking away from the song, is, and like in an actual performance, maybe you have them do a bunch of scaffolding stuff and that's fun. But an audition is to show like, I can be this character and I can communicate this story. And he is just doing bells and whistles to distract away from the storytelling. He is just doing high kicks. He is just doing pull-ups.
No,
he is
totally
just like jumping
that.
Around. The only moment that feels like an actual person is that end part that you shouted out.
Yeah.
And it pisses me off because we are supposed to see this audition and be like, he should get Tony. And if he doesn't, he's robbed. He shouldn't get Tony from this audition.
Totally. And and I think even the language that they are using, like the casting people, is bad. But it's also, it's a high school. Like, what do we expect from them? They're just like, I just don't believe that Kurt could do it. When it's like, they're equating Kurt to Tony when it's like, no, Kurt is an actor.
Yeah.
I know plenty of very effeminate men who have been romantic leads in shows. It's acting, you know, but like the school is silly about it, you know.
And that's, I don't know. That's the other thing, is maybe this is just me. I didn't think the Romeo and Juliet scene was that bad.
No. Oh my God.
I was like, why are they laughing at
this? That bothered me too. And it, like, first of all, Mrs. Pillsbury, of all people, should not, like, Artie, sure, Coach Beast, please don't, but sure, but, like, Mrs. Pillsbury especially, and Rachel, Kurt's best friend, the fact
because
that they're
Mercedes
all, who's
doesn't
Mercedes
exist
Jones,
anymore.
But, like, you know, they're best friends right now.
Yeah.
Like, laughing in his face for doing a really earnest try. And I thought he did a great job.
That was the thing, is I was like, I watched Greatest Star. And the whole time I was like, there is not a chance that this is Tony. And yet that song ended and they all applaud. And we were supposed to be like, that was very good. And then I watched Romeo and Juliet and I was like, oh, actually I could see him playing Tony based on this. And then they all laugh and we were supposed to think it was terrible.
Yeah.
And I was like, me and the writers do not agree
on
this. No,
totally. And it's all, they just don't think that Kurt can do it. They don't think that Kurt as Tony is like, is even plausible because Kurt is like, quote unquote, too gay. And it's like, you are so silly. The show is crazy.
Also, hear me out.
Hearing you.
This is Coach Beast's worst episode.
I love Coach Beast.
They are a menace in this episode.
Nearly every episode they are on. It really bugs me.
First they're like, hey, I talked the football players into playing the Jets. So every white character has been cast.
Yeah,
so
you're
this club that is mostly white, you're just going to be the Sharks.
Yeah.
Then they have the line about like, Rachel's Jewish, so that could help with the Puerto Rican thing. And then they're like, I really want a Maria that's not white. And it's like, how about a Maria who is Latina? Maybe let's aim for that.
Let's not do the show.
Yeah. How about we pick a different show? And then they have the line where they're like, well, here's like, Kurt's very talented, but I want a Tony who excites my lady parts. These are children. This is a high school production. They are children.
They are children. And like, don't speak that way about your, especially not, they're children. They're also your freaking students.
Yeah, no. And Coach Beast is the first one who laughs during Romeo and Juliet.
Yes.
Like, everything they did in this episode, I was like, whoa, you suck. I don't know what's going on. You're terrible. It was bad.
Yeah, bad.
Oh, also on, I'm just looking at my notes. The Romeo and Juliet scene, why was there a set?
Well, how did they get costumes?
Well, not only that, why was there like, but also yes, where did those costumes come from? And how did they get a bed? But why was there already like a sky full of stars up?
Yeah.
And a chandelier? Because we saw Rachel and Kurt's first audition and that's not what was hanging up. Very weird.
Also, like, was someone else just like gonna use those? And they were just like, keep them up.
Maybe the dance team had like a performance that night. And they're like, sorry, we have these up for our show.
Oh, the dance team. Probably.
The McKinley dance team. They're excellent.
Probably.
Honestly, if it's the Cheerios, they are excellent.
Yeah.
No sarcasm.
None. Yeah. How did you feel about Blaine's audition?
I really liked it. And once again, I was like, this is how you audition for Tony.
Yeah.
It is just, well, this is how you audition. It is just Blaine. There are no bells and whistles. Mm-hmm. There are no distractions. It is just Blaine singing a song and communicating a story.
Catch,
yeah, just one-handed catch.
I'd love to play Tony.
I'd love
Whistling
to play Tony, too.
Down the river. Well, you'll have to fight me for it.
Great.
Come on, deliver.
But yeah, I thought it was very good. I also think it's funny that he, like, is supposed to be auditioning for Bernardo or Officer Krupke and picks, like, Tony's most famous song.
Like, what the freak, Blaine? Like, and listen, Blaine's a good guy. I appreciate that Blaine is like, oh my God, like, I'm new here. I'll bow out. Like, you can totally have Tony. I'll audition for Officer Krupke. Not a big deal. Like, love him for that. They're in high school. It's not The Brood, woo. You know what I mean? Like, it's not Broadway. I respect Blaine for that. But also, what the hell? You're going to go sing a Tony song?
Here's my thought.
What's your thought?
Which, to be fair, Kurt never tells Blaine that he can't audition for Tony.
Yeah.
But Kurt makes it very clear through his vocal, his tone of voice and his body language that he doesn't want Blaine to audition for Tony.
Yeah, like... Kurt should not be asking Blaine to do that.
I hate that crap.
Oh, I do too. No, I hear you.
When someone, which if you are auditioning for a show and you want a certain part, of course you can say that you want it, but I hate when people act like they can call dibs on a part and be like, and so if you're my friend, when I was in Hello Dolly, I had this exact situation happen to me. Mm-hmm. I was a sophomore. One of my best friends was a senior and he turned to me and he said, "Will you know that I have to get Cornelius over you, right? Because I'm older. And so, like, it's my turn to have it." And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
And then I just went in and auditioned for Cornelius because I was like, I'm sorry, you're not the boss of me. And then I ended up getting Cornelius. But I'm
I feel like I hear people talk about that kind of stuff all the time where they're like, well, my friend really wants to be Maria in West Side Story.
And it's like, well, it's not their choice.
Exactly.
It's the director's choice. So let them choose.
Funny about that kind of stuff.
No, it irritates me to no end when people act like they can claim dibs on a part and that if you also want that part, you're somehow betraying their friendship. Yeah. Like, I'm sorry. It's whoever the director wants.
Decide anyway. Like, yeah, exactly. Bold of you to act like you have this power.
So frankly, I kind of do think the headcanon that Blaine really wanted Tony, but he was like, but Kurt doesn't want me to audition for Tony. And so he kind of lied to himself and was like, I'm auditioning for Bernardo. I'm just singing this song because it's like, a really good song.
And he's like winking. Yeah.
Yeah. And he like fully convinced himself, like, I'm not actually going for Tony. Mm-hmm. But his subconscious was like, no, we're doing this song because I want Tony.
He's like, we're going to kill it.
I don't think he's a bad boyfriend for doing that.
No, I don't think so either. I don't. And I also like see Blaine from what we know as of Blaine to do something like that. Like to be like, you know what? Like Kurt really wants it. I'm the new kid in town. I'm going to join booty camp. Yeah. I'm going to like pay my dues here. I see you. I've known people to do that. You know, of course, Kurt didn't like explicitly ask him to do that, but I can see how he would feel that way.
Yeah. And I do think that Kurt is completely justified in his feeling of
absolutely of him you being can be like, upset
like I've been here for so long and I've worked so hard and then like my boyfriend just transfers here and like if he gets the part of me that's really gonna hurt like I think they're both completely valid. I don't think Kurt is in the wrong for being hurt. Yep. I also don't think Blaine is in the wrong for going for it anyway.
No, I don't think so either. Yeah.
And I mean, Kurt, if you wanted Tony that bad, you should have picked a different song.
Or like asked us and like just do a cut of that song, get a different key and just stand there.
Mm-hmm. Just do the end of what you did.
Yeah.
In a lower key.
Because that moment where it's like, oh, what's
when it slows down?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I'm the greatest star.
Yeah, the like, I'll blow my horn section.
Yes.
Yes.
It's awesome. And I thought it was a great, and then he brought out the knives.
Yes. And then he brought out the knives. And I was like, great. Well, here's another distraction. I'm going to stop looking at your face now.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. It felt like, very specific reference, in the musical Spelling Bee, that whole number felt like I speak six languages.
Yeah.
Which the whole point of that number is that it's a girl who's like so multi-talented and just keeps rubbing it in everyone's faces. But this was completely earnest.
All American in hockey.
And everything I do without getting sore. I speak six languages, and I like the theme from Rocky. Though I play Mozart more. I love that song. Ugh. Anyways.
You should be in that show.
I should be Chip Tolentino in that show.
Come on.
Hello.
I'd love to be a speller in that show. I am doomed. Not doomed. I love Rona Lisa Pretty.
I hate to tell you this.
I know.
You are so Rona.
I know.
Like,
I am
everything
so the town
about
realtor.
You.
I know.
Is so Rona Lisa Peretti.
Also, that role is so fun.
No, it's also the biggest part in the show.
It is a blast and a half. I have played that part before. And it was like my senior musical, that show. And if you don't know the show very well, it's about spelling bee, and Rona Lisa is like the host of the show, and her special thing is that when you bring people up on stage, you get to like say funny things about them. Mm-hmm. So it's like, Ian Allred has been to hell, you know. It's just stupid to like that. So it's a really fun like improv part. It's a blast.
Yeah,
I love that show. Wait, but what if you were Doug Panch and I was Rona Lisa Pereni? That would be so fun. That's basically our podcast.
That's true. Doug Panch doesn't sing. I'd be upset.
Oh, no, I hear you.
I'd be upset.
Yeah, because you got to do that. They don't win.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, ever since we joined this theater company, this whole podcast has gone off the deep end
it
about
has.
Being a
I'm
theater
I'm so sorry
kid.
For the normies that listen.
I know.
It is just a theater podcast. Well, who knows could be. Do you have any more thoughts about I'm the Unicorn?
Gosh, let me take a look at my notes. I don't think so.
I just have a few. A, Brittany was correct about the capital of Ohio being O. She deserves props for that. Thinking outside the box. Love to hear it.
Also, she's not fucking wrong.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. The teacher should have been like, oh, haha, funny.
Like,
that is technically correct. But like, what's the capital city?
Yeah.
Instead, she just says, you're so stupid.
I know.
The teachers at this school are awful.
I'm so glad I don't go to McKinley High.
Also,
can't wait to graduate.
Dustin Goolsbee, axed,
so
dead,
handsome.
Goodbye. Wasted character.
I know.
And
he didn't
finally
even sing.
Right?
Everyone go watch Julian the Phantoms for me, if not for Cheyenne Jackson, for me.
And finally, when Will is introducing the directors, which also, what? High School Musical has three directors. But when he's introducing the directors, he says, Emma, because she did such a good job of helping me with Rocky Horror. Sure.
Bro, come on.
That whole thing was...
Also, she had so much going on.
She was so hot and heavy for you that she overlooked the fact that you were like almost sexually abusing your students.
Yeah.
So I don't think she did a very good job with that show.
I would say sexually abusing your students.
Yeah,
period.
You were making them be in public in their underwear when they weren't comfortable with it. And then you were going to be in your underwear and dance with them.
Uh-huh.
And she gave it all the stamp of approval because she was so turned on by you. So
yeah.
Wouldn't say she did a great job. I think that's a bit
agree.
Of a reach. Well, you know, we are the unicorn.
Yeah.
And that's a season wrap on us.
Absolutely.
True.
We haven't been able to do a assignment of the week in a long time.
Oh.
I know. And I think that's just because the show is losing track of what it once was. You know what
I mean? Yeah. I also don't mind not having assignments of the week in the show itself.
No, yeah.
But I do like doing them on the podcast.
I do too. Should we like pick a song to audition for West Side Story with?
Sure. Oh gosh. I would do, I know what I would do.
Oh.
I would do from Fantastic's Matt song, the Beyond That Road, there's a something, something. The I can see it.
Oh, it's perfect.
Saw shining somewhere. Those lights out there invite me to come there and learn. I just think that song is just something's coming in a different font.
Let's say we're both auditioning for Tony. I have no business playing any of the women in that show. Hear me out.
Yes.
I know it's overdone, but I think I would be good.
What are you
doing? What if I sang Santa Fe?
Honestly, that's a good Tony song.
I think so.
Good for you. Any male I want song feels like Tony to me.
Truth. It's also somehow like a period piece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There it is. All right.
All right. Well.
Best part, worst part.
Doom, doom, doom.
Best part, worst part.
Boom.
Ian, what's your best part?
Best song in this episode is... Oh, gosh. There were not that many songs in this episode looking through it. Honestly, there's a place for us. If I saw this in a production of West Side Story, I'd be like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But as a standalone piece, it was pretty good and fun, and I liked it.
I hear
Best part is I loved seeing Diane Agron cry again.
No, for real. We've missed that.
I have missed it. I also just really like everything Brittany does in this episode.
Yeah, I agree.
What about you?
I think... I'm going to say my best song was when everything, the slow part of I'm the Greatest Star.
Yes.
Love it. Love it. Love it. I think my best part of the episode is either the Bert conversation with Kurt in the auto body shop, whatever that's mm-hmm. called, or the beginning part with Rachel and what? With Brittany and Kurt.
Yes, yes, yes.
Where she's like, you never lost how special you were. And I think that's awesome. So that, Ian, what was your worst part?
My worst part was nearly everything that Coach Beast said.
Yeah.
It was all bad. What about you?
Gosh, where do I begin? I don't love the Will and Quinn moment. That really hurt. I also don't love specifically how Shelby just kind of like bombards Rachel and just like gives her a theater advice.
Gosh.
It's like, this is how I parent. Like, you're not her parent. Get out of here.
No wonder Jesse is so awful and does that same thing to Rachel. He learned from the best.
Literally.
You show up to someone's life. You expose all of their vulnerabilities. You make them feel terrible about themselves. And then you leave for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible.
I am a shining star.
Oh, that moment is very funny.
I know it is.
Very funny.
Well, hell, that's our episode, y'all.
Oh, if you have thoughts about this episode, you can send them as a voicemail to anchor.fm/recoveringgleek. Mm-hmm. You can send them as an email to recoveringgleek@gmail.com. You can also follow us on social media. We have a Twitter @recoveringgleek. We have an Instagram and a TikTok @recoveringgleek_podcast. Also, friend of the podcast, Sam, made us a subreddit. So if you're on Reddit,
go roast me there.
Go
just
to
kidding.
r/recoveringgleek.
Uh-huh.
If you want to support this podcast with that sweet, sweet green, you can on anchor.fm/recoveringgleek. If you want to support it with your sweet, sweet words, you can by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts and iTunes.
Mm-hmm. Hell yeah, dudes. I hope you have a great rest of your week.
Heck yeah.
Keep it real big deals.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. If you dye your hair pink, don't let your teacher be an a-hole to you.
Yeah. So. But if you, but hear me out.
But if he's being an a-hole to you, that's not your fault.
If you didn't dye your hair pink, then you can let them be an a-hole to you.
Yep.
Then
I don't know why I said that. It just really bothers me.
It's
alternative kids are great students a lot of the time. any hoosers.
Yeah, that's also an annoying. That's why it bothers me that they're focused so much on how she looks.
I know.
Because I had so many friends in high school who looked just like that and had like straight A's.
I know. It's also, it takes like fine dedication to wake up and mm-hmm. like, put on makeup and like dye your hair. It takes dedication and it takes like, you know, like a self-discipline. And that's something to admire about someone.
Like, let's focus on the fact that she's dating an adult man.
Yes.
And that she is smoking so much that it hurts to stand.
Like
let's hone in on that.
Absolutely. You guys, love you heaps. Here is a kiss on your forehead if you accept it.
Thank you for listening to Recovering Gleek. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok at recoveringgleek_podcast. If you liked our podcast, be sure to leave a review and tell your friends, please.
I am a shining star.
Adina? Wait, Adina? What are you doing in here? Wait, no, where are you going? No, Adina! You guys, she left.
Oh my god, Patty LuPone!
Patty LuPone. I am a shining star! Patty!
Patty, how'd you get here?
I bye you guys.